Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Hi, everybody. My name is Vivian Akwa, and I'm here today having a conversation with my dear friend Mary Jane Roy and also Megan as well. I'm just going to do a quick introduction about the talent shortages, right? Because at the moment, right now, many people are unaware that there is a huge talent shortage at the moment, right now. Where we have to be mindful of who are we inviting and who are we leaving out, and also you as a leader, when you are going through the phase of setting up your team goals or setting up the organization goals, do you also look into your talent turnover and also look into how you are retaining your talent? So I have something very valuable for you that can be very helpful, and that is the maximizing inclusion within your organization, within your team, with the Amplify DEI cards. You can facilitate conversations about DEI. Sometimes people have told me that they find it challenging to talk about DEI and also find out what other people would like to amplify regarding diversity, equity, and inclusion. So here you are. You can create your own DEI recipe. If you want to learn more, reach out to me or go to the cards website at the moment right now. And some of the cards have a QR code where it will lead you to some micro video. But just so you know, there is a end of year, or I would say a new year offer where you can go. So please look up the code and I'll make sure to share it online. But with no further ado, because Megan is here right now, I want to make sure that we have that conversation for today. But before I introduce Megan, let me see, because I've muted Megan. Before I introduce Megan, I want to do a proper introduction. So today's topic is about Gentelligence in action, where leaders can harness the generational diversity, right? So a quick introduction, Mary Jane. So Mary Jane is an advisor, facilitator, presenter, presenter for building healthy stress and resilience skills and strategies for employee staying power. And then we have Megan. Megan is a professor, author, speaker on generational diversity in the workplace, and she talks about Gentelligence, where this has been showcased on Harvard Business Review and also on many other platforms, and now today on this live stream. So I'm really excited, Megan, to have you here on this show. I'm curious about you. So, why do we need to humanize the workplace when you look into this from your perspective?
Well, I think, first of all, thank you for the invitation. Excited to talk with both of you. I think, everything we know about what makes workplaces healthy and engaging and helps us feel like our work adds value to our lives is all about humanizing. I think that the human experience at work is something we've been aware of for, a century at least, but not necessarily to the point where most organizations know how to do it well. We're still learning on that. And so I feel like, at least from my perspective, I focus a lot on age and generational differences and how, the fact that we all have different lived experiences should be fascinating and value added and, help us do things better. But of course, as you know well, if it's not managed and led well, the opposite often happens. So I think humanizing means really being open to the fact that everyone has unique value to add to the workplace and trying to figure out how we can better leverage that as an opportunity.
Yes. And then Mary Jane, you had a special question.
Megan, this wasn't in the questions that we had sent to you, but one of the things that has become sort of a pet peeve for me is generational labeling. And I wondered what your thoughts are on it and how useful it is or not.
Yes, I get that question a lot, actually. So I have a very specific, as you might guess, point of view on that. I think when people push back on the idea of generational labeling, or they don't like the idea of generations, I think specifically what they're saying is they're pushing back on generational stereotyping, which, of course, I absolutely agree with. We can't tell who you are if you tell me what year you're born, right? That's not what social science would say. However, I think we very quickly then jump to the fact that generations aren't real and we shouldn't label people based on their generation. And I don't think those are the same things. I think,
Right.
it's absolutely possible. And the work of Gentelligence, which is what I call all the work I do in this field, is about valuing people's different lived experience, meaning growing up in a specific period of time means that you have learned different things. You've had to create different norms, different strategies to navigate life and work. And generations, like any other kind of social category, are simply a way that we've said, well, let's try to understand that difference in a way that's a little bit more clear. They're a framework. So it's not ever meant to mean, or it shouldn't mean, that because you're part of Gen X, for example, that's my generation, that means millions of people born in that generation are exactly the same and have had the same experience. That's where that goes completely wrong. The way that I prefer to look at it, Mary Jane, is to say there are formative events, and not just the stereotypical cookie cutter ones you see on all the slides or articles about generations, but it means something to grow up in a particular period of history. There's things going on socially, culturally, politically, economically that do influence your norms. And that doesn't mean they've influenced my norms the way they've influenced the norms of every person in my generation. That's a very unique experience. But people significantly older or younger than me didn't have those same influences at the same period in their life. And so therefore, I'm going to bring ideas about work and success and balance and work ethic and all of those things that we're talking about these days to the workplace. And they're going to show up in a slightly different way, for really important, interesting reasons. So the short version is, I think saying that we should get rid of generations is similar to saying you should be colorblind when it comes to race.
Obviously
that's better than being biased and being, you know, using stereotypes against people and discriminating, but it does ignore the uniqueness of someone's lived experience to say I'm colorblind. And so to me, the same is true with generations, that it's a lens, it's the beginning of a conversation, but I am very against generational infographics or this is exactly how you manage Gen Z. That's just lazy. I think having smarter intergenerational conversations where I think, oh, why is that person who's 22 responding differently to the idea of mental health at work? That's a really interesting question. And their generation is a clue that can help me understand their perspective as opposed to me putting them in a box. So to me, the work we have to do is to say, it's absolutely possible that someone's generation is an important part of their identity, but that doesn't mean we believe everyone within a generation is identical. So that's kind of the line we have to walk on that.
No, I agree, Megan. Sorry, Vivian, I just wanted to just
continue.
I totally agree. My problem with the labels is exactly as you've described, is the stereotyping and the biases that this whole Gen Z is XYZ. And I think the generations are really important, as you just mentioned, with that context of where in history their lived experiences. So someone that is in South America has had a very different lived experience than I would have had in my 70 years here on this earth in North America. So yes, thank you, Megan. You illustrated it beautifully, you know, but how do we, my problem is that the brain, as soon as you label something, then it starts to categorize and put people in those boxes. So maybe a question for a different time, but it's how do we stop people from associating a label with those biases, you know? Yeah, that's a real concern that I have. Vivian, take it away.
Yes, because also, Megan, you mentioned Gentelligence, and I know that you have written a book, but maybe also the audience would like to know, what is she meaning by Gentelligence? And combined with that is, what made you write this book?
Sure. I think maybe I can tackle both your questions at the same time. So Gentelligence I'll try. Gentelligence is simply a term I came up with when I started really seriously speaking and consulting on this work in 2016. So I've been doing it for almost a decade now, probably longer than that. But it just simply means we need to be smarter about how we think about generations and age in the workplace. So the key focus of my work is helping people have smarter intergenerational conversations. It's not about scripts or infographics or boxes. It's about the fact that we tend to approach many things with diversity, of course, but specifically for my purposes, generations in a way that really flies in the face of all best practices around DE&I. We don't, for some reason, apply what we know is important or works or any of that wisdom when it comes to generations. We apply shaming, we apply bias, we apply labeling. We need to stop doing that. That's ridiculous. We've always had multiple generations in the workplace. We always will. What they're called will shift, but the challenge is going to be the same. And so the focus of Gentelligence simply is that we need to take what has historically been looked at as a threat and shift it into an opportunity. So I think, you know, Mary Jane, to answer your second question, when I speak on this, I talk not just about the idea of generational norms instead of stereotypes. Let's look at norms. Norms are frequencies. Norms we can measure. Norms are interesting, but doesn't insist every person is that or has that experience. But the second thing I add in is this idea of layers of identity. So if I say generation is a layer of your identity, your ages as well, those are connected but different. Where you grow up in the world, as you said, South America, North America, Europe, Australia, Africa, all of those places, but also gender identity or race or ethnicity or whatever, socioeconomic status, whatever is an important part of your identity should interact with generation to create this fascinating, complex story. And so a friend of mine who works in DE&I said, you know, generation should be the start of the conversation, not the end of the conversation. And so if you view it the way I do, which is that I champion the value of all generations, I'm fascinated by Gen Z. I work with them every day. I learn tons from them, as I did from the millennials before them. I learn a ton from my older mentors. The fact that they also happen to be baby boomers or millennials is an interesting, and as you said, provides context, but to me in a very positive way rather than one that's used for shaming. So that's what Gentelligence is about, is creating an opportunity out of what historically has been tension or threat.
I mean, while Megan was talking, I was also thinking about our relationship, Mary Jane, right? You are the older woman, I'm the younger, I'm from a younger generation. And the way that we talk about it, we don't let age be a barrier or a hinder. I mean, I've known that in the beginning of our friendship, of our sistership, I knew that there might be some technical challenges. Now Mary Jane has surpassed me, Megan. She has surpassed me. She's even sharing me ChatGPT tips and tricks and things.
See, there you go.
I wish that people would have a similar relationship as what the both of us have, to embrace technology, but also to see the valuable connections that people can create and learn from each other, whether you're younger, whether you're older as well, which brings me to the following question, and that is, when it comes to trust, how can leaders effectively build trust within an intergenerational workforce?
Yes, so important. And you know, the book has the four practices that we talk about, one of which is strengthening trust. So I'll focus on that. You know, a lot of that's about psychological safety. We don't, as humans, inherently trust someone we believe is, or we think is somehow different than us in a profound way. And age is a very visible sign of that. And so what happens then, of course, is you look at someone that you say, oh, that person's different than me. And if you don't have a, as you said with Mary Jane, a relationship or a connection with somebody in that area of difference, then you go to the stereotypes. That's easy, right? That's a shortcut. And we fill in those blanks. And so I wrote an article for Harvard Business Review earlier this year, which was about the power of intergenerational friendships. So it's kind of the extreme, right? The idea of, if I have friends, which I do across all generations, I don't use stereotypes, because immediately I think, well, my friend Josephine's a millennial. She doesn't fit any of those stereotypes. So probably most other people don't fit those either. And I'm done with that. If I don't know anyone who's in their 60s at work specifically, then I'll go to the stereotypes of that person isn't good at technology, or okay, boomer, or when are you going to retire? All those horrible things that we hear people say. instead of saying, oh, well, my friend Mary Jane is actually quite good at technology and she and I were having this great conversation about ChatGPT. So ideally, we provide as leaders opportunities for people to work on things that are meaningful with people significantly older or younger. And naturally, that doesn't happen because of age polarization. So I enter an organization the same time as people that graduated about the same time as me. So they're going to be in a similar age group. And I work through my organization probably at a similar rhythm. And then those things don't happen unless there is proactive effort on the part of my organization or my leadership to say, let's get a multi-generational team on that question of how we should integrate AI ethically into our business, right? Let's get all the different generations on board to work on it together. A specific tool that maybe would be interesting to think about is what we call mutual mentorship. So of course, we all know mentorship and reverse mentorship. And this is basically saying, well, it's mutual mentorship. And I work with a client who piloted this. They had, I think, a dozen people come together and have a mutual mentorship relationship over 6 months. They had planned sort of topics. And I came and attended a coffee they had at the very end of their 6 month mutual mentoring program. And the thing I found most profound was every single pairing said, I didn't expect we would have so much in common. And also, we've actually become really great friends. And so, you know, to the extent we can continue to think about it that way, I think that's how you build trust, is you say, well, you know, I've had this personal experience with one person, and now I want to have it with two people. And then soon some of that polarization really breaks down and you see the value. All it takes, just like any other kind of difference, is the first time you see the benefit yourself of having people with different lived experience in the room or in the conversation, you learn something, or you're educated differently about something, or you come up with a different idea because you worked with someone different than yourself. That's all it normally takes, in my experience, for you to see that value and want more of it.
But that's also when people allow themselves to create that relationship, to establish that relationship and understand that the workplace, I know I understand that the workplace is for work, but we don't go beyond creating that relationship aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's true. And I think, of course, there's lots of great research. When we talk about humanizing the workplace, you know, Gallup's research would say, one of those predictors of engagement at work is their odd question, I have a best friend at work, which they've gotten a ton of pushback on over the years, but it's very predictive of engagement. And I learned so much researching that HBR article, you know, even things like, yes, of course you can have learning at work about workplace relevant things, but I also heard from people, you know, let's say that I am in my early 30s and just became a parent, and I'm friends with somebody 10 or 20 years older than me who already went through balancing work and family when their kids were little, they're able to provide insight on the other side of something. And then, you know, that's creating a friendship because they didn't have to do that. They didn't have to say like, hey, I got this meeting, why don't you go pick up your kid who has a fever, or hey, it's going to get easier, or here's a tip of something I did that really helped. But the other thing I thought was really interesting was the idea that there's no competition often with a mutual mentorship because they're likely in a different career stage. Not always. We can have younger people leading older people, of course, but often, you know, you don't have that sort of comparison aspect you do with somebody similar in age or life stage of you, because those things are no longer on the table. And so it really allows, I think, for people to get to know each other and genuinely have a more trusting relationship where that person doesn't have any reason to lead me astray. They're just simply offering me advice. So I thought that was, you know, I enjoyed seeing that in real time and seeing that happen at that organization.
I'm going to dive deeper into that, Megan, on my own, because I find it a fascinating concept. And the other thing that I think is so important in these individual relationships is that, again, you do see the person as an individual and not as a stereotype. You know, this is what I think we forget when we label, that you know, each of us is an individual, and having those conversations, I think, is an eye opener for many people, as you mentioned. A question for you, and sorry, a little bit of a frog in my throat. discussing communication preferences, can you give us some illustrations of understanding these differences amongst generations?
Sure. So this is probably one of the most frequent topics I'm asked about by my clients, because it's every day, right? It's the little things and the big things. So this is where I think the idea of norms is really important, as well as the first practice, which is identifying assumptions. So I often get in a workshop or in a session, somebody saying, you know, kids today can't even have a conversation. There's no hope. They don't know how to communicate. Like all this judgment, right? You just hear the judgment. Mm-hmm. And so first it's like, well, is that necessarily true, right? That is a very judgment-laden conversation. Yeah. So we're gonna have a smarter conversation about it. So, you know, is it, and I try to reframe, I have some phrases, I'm all about practical tools. And so adjusting the lens is a second one of our practices. And so I'll often say, you know, that's the be curious, not judgmental. And I'll say, well, is it fair to say we maybe don't completely understand the relationship, for example, that Gen Z has with their phones, that it's different than the relationship I have with mine. And when you say, you know, young people today don't know how to communicate, there's a judgment in that. They communicate differently than you did, right? Or you do. So perhaps you have two or three communication channels that you prefer. They likely have a dozen that they're able to use for different reasons. And so you may have an opinion about the quality or appropriateness of different channels at work, which is completely valid, but let's not start with they don't know how to communicate. I think the other piece of it for me is, you know, I've learned a lot about identifying assumptions as our first practice, that often we assume we're having the same conversation with someone of a different generation or age, and we're having a different one. So for example, if you hear people say things like, well, this generation has no work ethic. Well, work ethic is subjective, right? That's not an objective thing. And so this generation is showing norms, not universally, but norms that they are shifting more towards a Gen X mentality of work isn't necessarily going to be the most important thing in my life. I'm going to prioritize health and wellness. Again, that's a norm, not a stereotype, just to be really clear that we're seeing that. And then I always say, well, why? Well, because they came of age during a pandemic, because they have more ways to communicate about the importance of mental health, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, Mary Jane, the assumptions are a big piece of it. I also think there's importance to talk about, you know, the channels that we talk about around the concept of communication. So I found that there's definitely preferences and norm preferences around communication channels, but I think we explore that. So for example, if you're finding it to be problematic, right? Let's say at work, an example might be, I send emails all the time. I work with Gen Z, and the response is not what it is when I tend to send them to people of my age group. And so I'm sensing that maybe my norm on communication channel preferences is different. And I've had a situation where it was very frustrating to me that this channel that I believed was appropriate didn't end up really being one that I was getting the level of responsiveness I expected. And so just to kind of give you an example, one of my tools, I instead of judging, I was frustrated, but I reached out to my team and I said, can you help me understand why I didn't get very many responses to the email I sent yesterday? I specifically asked for some information by the end of the day and only a few people responded. So the can you help me understand, I think, is a really great tool. Help me understand why I didn't get the communication response that I needed or expected. Immediately, the response was, oh, sorry, I only check my email every couple of days, which blew my mind. I'm like, what are you talking about? I check my email every 5 minutes. So that was helpful for me. And again, I can say, well, that's not appropriate, or in the workplace, or if you work with me, you're going to have to do that differently. But I listened and I thought, well, that's fascinating. What am I going to do with that information? And so then to me, the second piece of that is to say, well, that's very helpful for me to understand. Can I share where I'm coming from? I check my email very frequently. You know, my norm is that email is the formal official workplace communication channel. And when I need something, I tend to use that so that you know it's important. We have a paper, we have a trail about it. And so that was, you know, the first conversation, can you help me understand why this didn't happen? The second conversation is, let me share with you my point of view and in the experience I had. And then we often skip the third conversation, which is, so now what? You know, and I could, as the leader, decide, well, we're just going to use email because I'm in charge. But I always encourage people to think about their goal. So my goal is effective communication. My goal is that I get the information I need when I need it. So do I want to be, you know, die on the hill of the email, or do I want to get the information in a way that's going to be effective and efficient? And so I said, how do we solve this problem? Because I'm going to need what I ask for in an efficient way. And then I used my fourth intelligence practice, which is expand the pie. And I said, how would you do it? If you were me, what would you suggest we do given this situation? Because if they're part of the solution, they're going to be more likely to get on board. And they said, well, what if you just shoot us a quick text if there's like a time sensitive email? And I kind of at first had the reaction of, are you kidding me right now? I have to text you that there's an email. But I thought, well, that's faster than me sitting there refreshing my email, wondering why I'm not getting and getting tense. And so I said, all right, I'm willing to try that. You know, and then I also would like you all to get in the habit of checking your email, you know, at least three times a day. Right. So we kind of compromised on it, and it worked relatively well. So I think before getting upset that, you know, for example, a younger person's texting you at 10 p.m. about a work situation, or that your older boss, for example, might be wanting to have a face-to-face conversation and you don't think that that's necessary, always go to the why. Can you help me understand why you want me to come in and meet on that, or why you think meeting's important, or whatever it is? Just really quick, the last one, the one that's probably the stickiest thing I've ever talked about, and you probably saw this, Mary Jane, in my LinkedIn, but I discovered just really accidentally that my Gen Zs told me that using a period to end a text message was considered very aggressive, and to them, which blew my mind. Again, I couldn't even wrap my head around how that would be possible. And so I did a lot of, can you help me understand? And and basically found out that a text message for Gen Z tends to be more like a conversation. And many of them learn to text before they learn to write. And the idea of making it formal and putting a period at the end reads like we need to talk. And here I had been punctuating my text messages left and right, and apparently invoking stress and fear in my younger teammates and students and colleagues. And I said, well, this is a great Gentelligence moment, because I had no idea that you were reading it that way. That wasn't my intent. I apologize if that's how it came across. But also, it's a two-way street. And if someone texting you is over 35, there's probably not that intent attached to the message. So you also have to realize that you're assuming things from that are not necessarily accurate as well. So that's probably been the stickiest thing that I found, is that people are sort of fascinated by that realization because they see it in real time.
Oh, I wanted to address two things went to my mind, because while you were sharing that example about we listen, I immediately, my mind goes into a whole loop-to-loop about the whole TikTok and Instagram reel trend that is going right now. We listen and we don't judge. I do want us to apply that principle in the workplace, where we listen to each other and let the person explain, and also ask questions more so that we understand where people come from, right? And on the second hand, I didn't realize what you shared right now is something that I already did. And that is sometimes when a text message can be consumed in a different way, I try to use my voice note or voice or send voice app so that you can hear my intention, because oftentimes I might be typing in a different way that you may consume it as positive or negative or neutral. And I want you to be able to hear my emotion into the way that I felt, and also understand that I'm coming from a particular emotion or a particular space, so that you can understand the total message, right? Because oftentimes when you type something, maybe you type it in a haste or you made a mistake, the message can be consumed in a different way.
Yes, that's so true. And I think that's only the second time I've ever heard someone say that. And I think that's such a great way to adjust the lens. And again, yeah, Nobody says you have to do that. You're in charge. And exactly, if you decide that's not preferable to you or that would seem strange, that's fine. But the fact that you think, well, I'm just as happy to do that as text, and if that's going to avoid miscommunication, I don't mm-hmm. mind doing that, is exactly what Gentelligence is about. Because I don't mind not adding a period to my text messages, particularly if I know I'm sending it to someone that might interpret it differently. But if I did mind, and again, this isn't necessarily just a communication thing, then there's also a really important approach, element of Gentelligence around explain why. So mm-hmm. I have a friend who works in DE&I who gave me this wonderful term, and I always like to give her, I want to make sure I don't take credit for it, but she talks about the concept of load-bearing walls. And so mm-hmm. load-bearing walls in any organization are, of course, things that, like, this is vital to who we are. And it could be a load-bearing wall for you as a person or a leader, right? The things that are non-negotiable. Mm-hmm. So often in organizations, we have these processes or practices, and what we see younger people, their norm is to ask, why do we do it that way? Or does it have to be that way? And of course they do that. Again, if you think, why do they do that? They grew up with unlimited access to information and explanation. So of course in the workplace, they are going to be more likely than I was to ask, mm-hmm. well, why do we not let somebody be promoted until they've been there a year? Like, why do you have to wait a year to be promoted, or 2 years or 3 years or whatever the norm is? I probably wondered the same thing, but I didn't, the norm for my generation was you didn't ask. You just put your head down and thought, well, that's strange, and I guess I'll find out later when I'm allowed to know. And their norm is different. Their norm is to ask. And so let's say mm-hmm. they ask you, why do you have to wait 18 months before you're considered for promotion here? Now, if that's a load-bearing wall, I always say, look at the blueprint. So if you as a leader think, well, why do we do it that way? And you have a great explanation, you go through these different experiences, that's how long it takes us to help you, you know, go through all the functions of the business or, you know, whatever it is, that's a load-bearing wall. And you say, no, we really mean that. That's really important. We thought about that one, and this is why we do it. Then you should be willing to explain it. Mm-hmm. But if you look at that practice or process, and it is, this is mine, a 90s half wall, hopefully you both will know what I'm talking about there, where it's like, we built those in the 90s. Nobody knows why that wall exists. It doesn't actually serve a purpose. And all you have to do is walk around it. Mm-hmm. Then maybe that's a practice that's worth revisiting. And so, you know, I always say it's fine if it's a low bearing wall. Nobody's Gentelligence isn't about throwing out what we think is important because younger people don't like it or don't understand it or want something different. It is about the openness, though, of saying, well, let me walk you through why it's 18 months. And sometimes people mm-hmm. will say, well, nobody did that for me, or why should I have to do that? And I don't think begrudging people because I didn't get the explanation is a good leadership strategy. Like mm-hmm. we would have really appreciated an explanation, and we just weren't given one, or we didn't know to ask for one. And so I do think that's really important, is the your voice texting example is great because you decided how you text is not a load-bearing wall for you, that you're fine to adjust that if it's more effective. Which of course what good leadership is. And sometimes the answer is no, this is really important. Let me take 5 minutes and explain to you why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mary Jane.
I'm just thinking to myself, you know, Megan, you've given some really, really fantastic illustrations of how to apply this. A couple of words that come into mind, curiosity, and you mentioned it earlier as well, but, and also double loop thinking, you know, is what we're doing really necessary, you know, to be willing to question as a leader policies that we have implemented, maybe not even understanding what they are. So great, it really is great. And then I have to think about myself and the way I text. I even stop to put commas in and try and use a person's first name, you know, Vivian, comma. And so I have absolutely no idea how, you know, how that text would be interpreted on the other end, but you've reminded me of a word that stays with me, and that is be curious, you know. If I get a pushback on something, then I can understand it, you know? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Vivian, I would love to have one last question on, for Megan, if we can.
Definitely. Yeah. I think I know which one.
You probably do know me well enough. The older workers in the market, in the job market. Because this is also something that I'm dealing with in the Wise Move Society that I'm part of. And so it's about the 50 plusers and how difficult a time they have. And I thought it was just in the Netherlands, but I know now it's not. It's pretty much everywhere. To if they're out of work, to find work, et cetera. How can they counteract the biases that they're facing? Mm. Yeah,
such an important issue for sure. I hear about this quite a bit. And I think for me, it comes back to identifying assumptions. So our very first practice of Gentelligence, but maybe we use it in a slightly different way here. So we talked about this when we were talking about leading people. So if you're an older person leading younger people or younger person leading older people, those are different challenges. But the first thing that you could think of, which I believe applies to this situation, is what assumptions might be made or being made about me as an older worker, right? So I use this for example, like what assumptions might be made about a younger leader leading people who are older. So if you're an older worker and you're thinking, what assumptions might people be making about me that, you know, might be leading to me struggling to get a job? And some of them you can't do anything about. There's just a certain amount of inherent bias and you don't want to work for those people anyway. But I do understand that it's a real problem. So I think often there's this stereotype that older people are resistant to change and or don't want to learn and or they believe they know better. Which all of those things, you know, if we take a Gentelligence angle, come from slightly different realities around that. So, but let's say that I'm an older worker and I think, okay, well, I don't meet any of those stereotypes. I love learning. I love new experiences. I'm looking forward to the next chapter in my life. To me, you hit those head on, right? You do everything that is authentic and valid to address the fact that you are open to learning, not at the expense of your credibility or your lived experience or acting like you haven't learned and don't know many things. But I think, you know, as I've gotten older, my genuine, to go back to that word, curiosity and interest in learning from people younger than me is a huge part of why I'm respected by those people, because the traditional mindset that many of us grew up with was when you're in charge or as you get older, you know best, or you should know everything, or you should have it all figured out, or you don't ask for help. And now we know, of course, that that's not true, that leaders are respected when they ask for help or when they are vulnerable to what they don't know or need help with. And so I think for an older worker, framing their approach as, you know, being excited to learn, being excited to collaborate, to partner, open to different ways of doing things. And I think that's not to say that those older workers don't have a ton to teach. But in my experience, instead of, you know, the way many of us were taught by older people, which is a lecture, let me tell you what you need to do. Let me tell you how we do it here or the best way. you get ears closed by younger people generally when you lecture, because now with all of the information in the world, younger people don't need information. They need conversation. They have information coming out of their ears. They don't even know what to do with it. The idea of me saying, for example, you know, oh, that's really interesting. What I know when I was at your stage of my life, I had the following challenges. Like, are those challenges you have now, or are they different for you? Like, I'm genuinely interested, because before I give you my insight, my experience, my advice, I would like context. Like, I'm not going to assume, right, that your life is the same as my life. Tell me about what you're up against. Tell me what you think. Tell me how you would do this. And then once you do that as an older person, the younger person in the equation is a significantly more likely to listen, because you've created an opening, right? This person cares about me. They respect me, and therefore I respect them and want to learn from them. So I think when it goes back to the question of the job search, if the stereotypes are that you can't use technology and don't want to change and are done learning, refute those, right? If they're authentically not true for you, that which is true for many older people, signal that they're not. I'm so excited to learn. I think this company's fascinating. Here's the things that I'm interested in learning about. I do have some great relevant experiences that I'm interested in bringing to see how they might be helpful, but I want a partner. So I think I am always about meeting stereotypes head on and showing why those aren't accurate when it comes to me as a person, as an individual.
I love it, Megan. And it reminded me immediately of, and Vivian, you know her as well, but I won't mention her last name, but Rosemary, who is retired at 64, 65 from one of the big four companies, and immediately got another job as a consultant for a company. And I said, how did you do it? I said, most people have such trouble. She said, I played up on the fact of my age and my experience and what I love to do. And she said, I made it sound like I was the best thing they could possibly get. And she was, you know, for the company, but she didn't try to hide her age, you know, or the 45 years of experience that she had. She played up to it and said, this is what you're getting in me, you know? And I think that something of what you've shared reminds me that this is a good way to go, you know, to grab attention of an HR.
It also reminds me of the Netflix series Later Daters, right? I don't know if you have seen it, but especially there is a Black woman who's dating, let's say, a slightly younger Black man. But she doesn't look like she's 60 or 70 or so. She looks definitely younger. And what you are saying, and also Megan, Mary Jane and Megan, what you are saying both is that when you put your value, but also your age on the table, in this case, the company has so much to win. If they don't see that value, then that also signals you to move on to the next or move to a different company as well. So definitely, Mary Jane, if you haven't seen it, it's interesting. It's executive produced by Michelle Obama. And it's interesting to see that aspect working out in the workplace, where we remove the things, the way of work, how it used to work. It doesn't work right now. And we have to be able to work nicely with each other, to work respectfully with each other. So why not do that? I want to share the comments, because people have been sharing some comments in between as well. So August is sharing, I'm so glad that our brand, we are in fact required not to check the email more than 3 times a day. So from leadership to the newbie, we keep all our email closed, except the 3 times in the shift when we stop to catch up on communication and need our attention. It took us a while, but we love this lifestyle of our work. Then Sebastian is sharing, cutting off has become the norm. Listening now is the exception. It's amazing how things work out for better when we do listen. And he also, I think he also is referring to this one, as in, because they, and I am making the assumption that it's Gen Z are more vocal in challenging the social construct and want rationale behind actions and processes. And then Dr. Gustava is sharing, thank you.
Lovely. I was just gonna say that first comment, especially, I think this is so great in that, you know, the idea of, I've heard people my age and older say, you know, when my younger colleagues, let's say, get up to leave the office at 5, you know, whatever mm-hmm. parameter or boundary they've set, then that's the time they were supposed to work to, and they're going to go home now and do other things. There's this interesting, almost, part of it is judgment, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe mm-hmm. they're leaving. But then I also started hearing this admiration, right? I wish I could mm-hmm. do that. And I think, again, there's a lot of things this younger generation is vocalizing, you know, mm-hmm. per the social contract that was mentioned, that are things that many of us would have loved to have, but we maybe haven't necessarily felt like the norm existed that we could ask for it without penalty. And so mm-hmm. I do think this idea of, well, what if we only checked email 3 times a day? Or what if there was no expectation that after a certain time we were obligated to work? Would that create a healthier environment for all of us? And so that's where the two-way mm-hmm. learning, I think, is really important, that the mantra of Gentelligence, and maybe this is a good way to kind of conclude, is that every generation has something to learn and something to teach.
Yeah.
And it's the openness of just that is the way that we want to live. Those are the cultures we want to create, I think, is, to go back to your point, that is a very humanizing way to build a culture.
I couldn't have said it better.
Thank you.
A great closing statement.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. The Dutch have an expression. I was hanging on to your lips, you know that.
I love that.
I want to say thank you for this conversation, and I will definitely also make sure that next year, beginning of next year, it will be recycled and be shared as well, because you shared a lot of valuable gems, mm-hmm. but also not only regarding how do we communicate, but also how are we asking the right questions so that we provoke curiosity instead of judgment, right? So mm-hmm. it then goes to mind with this whole TikTok challenge at the moment right now. We listen and we don't judge, but then the safe way, not the judgy way though. So I appreciate you, Megan, for being here. And for everybody who's listening, I'm watching as well. I want to say happy holidays, however you decide to celebrate it. And if you don't celebrate it, then take some time to recharge your batteries. And until next year.
All right.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Megan. Yeah. Thanks, Vivian.
Thank you.